We're just normal men.
What do you mean, normal men?
We're just innocent men.
Expect Casey to try to put a little something extra on the slider here.
Sun comes out from behind a cloud, and suddenly we have sunshine covering the infield. A 1-2 pitch to the plate.
Swing and a miss! He struck him out!
Aggies are going to the College World Series!
Well, howdy, guys. Welcome back to the Red Ass Podcast. Today is Tuesday, June 18th, and man, talk about ourselves a weekend in Aggieland. There was a ton of things going on, as well as in Omaha. Just a ton for us to get into this week.
Yeah, obviously, you know, the reason we're doing this on Tuesday is because we were waiting for A&M to finish up their second game. But yeah, just a lot going on in Omaha, period. We got a lot to get into, man.
Yes, we absolutely do. I am Rob White, fighting Texas Aggie class of 2014.
And I'm Roy May, fighting Texas Aggie class 2015.
Yeah, and it was a very, very exciting weekend. I figured, yeah, we might as well go ahead and jump into baseball since that seems to be the hot point of discussion from the weekend. So, first round of eliminations. We are officially starting to kick people out of town.
Yeah, you've got two that are gone. You know, this whole field, the whole saying was, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if any team wins it.
Right.
I think the competition is so, such at a high level, but so like also at an even level. So I was surprised to see NC State. I mean, somebody's got to go 2-Q, right?
Right.
Like somebody has to. I was surprised that NC State did.
Yeah, me too. NC State was one of those teams. Honestly, the way that they looked against Georgia, I was certainly starting to feel a little bit more confident. But just the ACC struggling with the SEC teams in this tournament, and it's pretty insane. But you go into your final here, where you're having to survive your elimination game against Florida State, and you didn't quite get there, unfortunately.
Yeah, and that's not to knock on the ACC. I mean, they're the only other conference that got to Omaha.
Right.
You know, they put up some fantastic teams. And, you know, on the bottom side of the bracket, it was, you know, kind of on our seed line, looking on both sides, you know, UNC, UVA, you know, us in Florida. So, I don't know, man. UNC looks good, though. You know, UNC looked real good. Obviously, Tennessee looks kind of – as build, quite frankly.
No question.
Yeah, Tennessee looks really good. I thought Florida State might be able to match their way to some success. I don't know, man. I love our side of the bracket, though. I think it always did set up well for us.
Yes.
And so now, you know, we're just kind of waiting around on today's games, which apparently may be some delays with weather, which only plays into our hands better.
Yeah, no doubt about it, especially when you have a team like us who we're currently sitting, you know, in the driver's seat. There's your title for the video. But, with us kind of holding true, I mean, you've got 40% chance during the day. And, I mean, overnight over the region here in Omaha, they're saying, yeah, 100% chance of rain tonight. And then even going into tomorrow, Wednesday, and then potentially Thursday. So, this weather pattern that they've been saying is going to be an issue is starting to rear its head a little bit up there. So definitely keep an eye out. There's probably going to be a handful of delays.
Yeah. And like I said, you know, that you'd love for this to actually just go off kind of without a hitch to an extent, just because, you know, I feel like there's delays in Omaha every year and it just gets kind of obnoxious. Just move the site or build a dome, like figure it out, you know?
Well, I think at absolute worst, dome, because, I mean, I love the town. I mean, Omaha's great. And if you have not been yet and you're considering it, getting a little bit closer towards the finals here, definitely try to pull some strings and see if you can't make it up there. It's a great town.
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of tongue-in-cheek. Omaha should always be the home. You know, Omaha should always be the home of it. But they've got to figure something out, quite frankly. It's just – It feels like it's every year, and what it does is it like builds in an even tougher Yeah, it builds in even a tougher kind of it's competition to an extent, because it's already hard on all these teams with all the pitching you've got to have. You know, no team is set up to, you know, to have that many pitchers and have that many quality pitchers. As you know, as much as talent as we've seen, you know, injected into the game over the last few years because of NIL, you know, the pitchers are still going to the major leagues. You know, the top end kids, you know, you've got a Paul Skenes every once in a while. You know, every once in a while you'll have guys that come to college. You know, and Skenes was unique just in the sense that he started at the Air Force Academy anyways. So, you know, whatever his mentality was, maybe it was baseball, maybe it wasn't baseball, maybe he developed while he was there. I don't know, you know. But you know, you're putting even more stress on bullpens that just aren't designed to handle it. You know, you're seeing a lot better position players in college baseball, but I don't know that you're necessarily seeing the same ratio of better pitchers coming to college. And on top of that, you know, not everybody's blessed with a guy like Max Wiener. You know, these kids, not everybody's getting developed the same way. So there's some top pitching staffs in the nation, and I'd be willing to bet there's a pretty sheer drop off of a handful of staffs or coaching staffs, you know, on the pitching side. And so developing these kids on top of it, and so you're just not going to have that many arms.
And you know, we're going to see that start to rear its head a little bit later on. To your point, my buddy TJ Trask made a really, really interesting tweet, and I wanted to share his thoughts. He said, "The really good thing for A&M, thank you, Mr. Prager, is A&M only used two pitchers last night. Aschenbeck, Cortez, and Lampkin are all going to be pitching on 4 days rest if they go into this next game. And we still haven't seen Badmev. We haven't seen Rudess, Peary. And then you could potentially turn into dudes like Eldridge, Moss, Jones, Smith. I mean, we have a ton in the tank right now in terms of staff, which is just to further, to further emphasize the maximumness of this wiener. He's doing a phenomenal job."
Well, and that's the thing is, first of all, in order to set yourself up for success in Omaha, obviously you need to win your first game. You know, that's probably the most important thing on the planet is to win that first game. You know, Florida and Kentucky having to play today, you know, that's tough on, Kentucky turning around. Like it's tough, quite frankly. You know, they've got to turn around and play. So it's and not everybody is, you know, are getting the performance. So it's get in the winner's bracket, but on top of that, like you've got to have some good performances. And I thought Prager just was absolutely phenomenal.
Talk about a bounce back. Talk about a
In
bounce
fact,
back, Morgan.
I think all the pitchers we've seen so far have been phenomenal. Yeah, it's not just a bounce back. I mean, we've been kind of tough the last month, but and his outings have been kind of okay. And then you couple that with what his experience in Omaha has been, and maybe there was some BIS creeping in. I personally had a lot of faith that he was going to bounce back from his previous start in the SEC tournament. I just I, you know he's more mature. You know it's going to mean something a little bit different to him because he had to, you know, miss that year with Tommy John's. And so I had a lot of faith that he was going to go out and be good. I wouldn't have sat here and told you he was going to give you 6 2/3 of no hit. But kind of to echo the sentiment, what I heard from Nuno this morning on TexAgs is, you know, you go back to the first game with Lampkin starting, and how many people were like, "Man, Lampkin, what the hell?" And every decision this loss has made so far looks as though it has been the right decision. And he entered this tournament trying to win it, not trying to win a couple of games. And so everything he's made decision-wise when it comes to pitching has obviously, you know, it's a long haul decision. Now, the decisions he's had to make in the field have been because his hand was forced, you know, obviously from injuries, and pitching as well, you know. But he had a little bit more time to make that decision coming in, whereas, you know, Braden going down and now, you know, the possibility of Jace having an issue, you know, he's having to make decisions a bit on the fly. Now, I'm of the firm mind that he doesn't get caught unprepared when things like this happen. Like he knows what's going on, and you know, baseball is a fickle game, and you've always got to have a whole bunch of decisions in your back pocket to make anyways. And so obviously, you know, the decisions he made after Braden went out, and you have Jace making that home run stealing catch, you know, because you got the 6'5" guy in right field. So it just like it, the ball finds him, right? Almost found the bleachers, but found him instead. You know, and then, you know, dealing with Jace as Jace got hobbled, running the bases. It was encouraging to see him get back out there for an at bat.
Yeah.
And so, and then, you know, talking, going back to the delays, you know, again, those delays can really play into our favor if Jace just needs like one extra day, you know?
That's exactly where my brain went, because I love the fact that we're kind of on this schedule right now where it's, you know, game, day off, game, day off, right? And it's working for us. It's creating a nice little rhythm. But obviously, if we do need a little extra time for Jace to be fit enough to be on the field and be able to participate. At the end of the day, I think the most important thing is we just need him healthy long-term. So I don't want us to force him out there and into a situation when potentially you can make up for that bad elsewhere across this lineup. And that's one thing I wanted to say about this lineup. If there's anything that I can give these guys a lot of credit for, they have found a way around to score, and it doesn't matter. Like, we're not mashing balls out of the ballpark constantly, but we're hitting, you know, hitting for power in the gap, and we're really, really timing our hits very well, which is awesome to see.
Well, and that's another thing you look at, is it's not like Jace is driven in every single run, you know, like,
no,
you know, the output's coming from, you know, from different places in the lineup anyways. Now, not to say that you don't want him out there, because he's an absolute weapon. You know, and just because he's hit a couple up into the wind doesn't mean he can't lace one down the line, because all the bombs are pretty much going into the bullpens anyways, you know, staying away from the wind, no matter what direction it's blowing. You know, if you can really rip one kind of, you know, it reminds me kind of like a couple of the homers that Appel hit, you know, in Olsen this past year. They're just kind of, they don't get a whole lot off the ground, but they get high enough off the ground to go over the fence kind of thing.
Yeah. Line drive homers.
Yeah. The up and out of here quick kind of thing. You know, not these big moonshots, because that wind is just gonna, it's gonna be what it is. The park is already big, and the wind is basically always blowing in,
right,
in one shape or form. And so, you know, the lineup's finding ways to manufacture runs, and that's all you can ask for. You know, I've just been, and there's been some great at bats. I think there was a little jumpiness in the first game, which I think is completely to be expected. There's still jitters about going to Omaha kind of thing. You know, first game,
yeah,
they calm down a little bit. Would really love to see Gavin get going.
Yes. I made a little prayer circle for him yesterday, him and Jace. I was saying, like, would love to see a couple of bombs today. But obviously didn't pan out that way. But the beauty is of the situation is you are still getting a chance to give them that chance, because we are continuing to win. We are creating those opportunities. So the rest of the lineup and the pitching, stress the pitching, these guys are keeping us absolutely in this fight. And even at not, you know, not even being at full strength, we just keep winning.
Well, and yesterday I thought it was kind of funny, you know, the Kentucky pitcher went out there, and, you know, I hadn't seen Kentucky. We didn't play him. You know, I watched Kentucky, but, you know, I hadn't seen this pitcher yet, because I watched Kentucky basically play their first game. Right.
Right.
first of all, super impressed with that kid.
Yeah.
The kid they threw on the bump. But he goes out there and throws like a 12 pitch inning. And I'm just, my first thought is, come on, man. Our entire like approach is what it feels like all year has been, get to the bullpen, just get to their bullpen, and we'll just light them up.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Goes out, throws 12 pitch inning. Then Prager comes out and throws an 8 pitch inning. Like, all right, well, it's going to be one of these days.
Right.
but I thought Prager was magnificent.
Yes.
I thought the relief pitching was just fantastic. Quite frankly, you know, the pitching has really stepped up, you know, proverbially stepped up to the plate, since they don't step up to the plate, but they stepped up. And that's the part that always worries you in Omaha, no matter how good your team is if my pitching gets in a bind and I start running out of pitchers, we're going to have to like mash our way to a win. And you can't really mash your way to a win. I mean, you can play contact and all that other stuff. You know, Kentucky, you want to talk about a team that's built for Omaha, right? The way they play small ball the fact that they'll bunt and run in any situation is just, it's so gutsy and fascinating to me. It reminds me of like a football coach that like always goes for two, where the coach that
always onside kicks,
always kicks it onside. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you just rolling the dice every time. So it makes it difficult, and the way Prager dealt with it, I thought was fantastic. because it puts a lot of onus on the pitcher. It's not, you're not just facing the hitter. You're having to deal with runners that you know for a fact are moving at some point. Like, they're very rarely sedentary. And then on top of that, you have to deal with the bunting game, which includes you know, PFP having to field your position. So all three of those, but I thought Prager handled it masterfully.
And if I could make one little plug, I want to say a quick thank you to Jackson Appel in the bottom of the second. That fielded bunt.
Biggest play of the game.
Was absolutely the biggest play of the game because it killed any and all momentum that Kentucky had on those base paths. And, I mean, it was just a phenomenal play. Just very, really, really well done.
Well, and I think if you were watching it, you felt it. You knew Kentucky was starting to kind of turn and burn just a little bit, and they were really getting into their rhythm, you know, how they like to play baseball. And it's not just the fact that he got the ball whipped and turned it and got him out. He was sitting down on one knee.
Yeah.
Like, he wasn't even in the crouch position. So, like, the difficulty level on that is pretty through the roof.
Yeah.
And then he laces one down the right field line. And they said it on the broadcast, and I'm glad they did. He is the most underrated player on that roster.
No doubt. I've been a big fan of him. And yes, not only his fielding ability, his bats. And I will say one thing that was really encouraging to me is how much the media has been pumping up this Kentucky defense. And they are a very good defense.
They're really good.
No question. They're a phenomenal defense. I got to give our boys credit because they outperformed them in that facet too. It's crazy. I mean,
but like, even if you can play at the exact same level they did, because they play at such a high level on defense. Kentucky is just a really good baseball team, quite frankly.
They are.
It was shocking to see them kind of choose the long ball in their first game. You know, well, you don't choose it. I guess sometimes it kind of just chooses you if you put a good swing on the ball. But to hear that their middle infielders combined had the middle infield had 5 errors on the season, that's bonkers.
That's really low. And I mean, that just is further proof for everybody. You know, this is a very good Kentucky team and they've been great all year. They've been flying under the radar for a lot of people all year. So I didn't hear a lot of hype, you know, when we hit number one and when Tennessee hit number one, you know, a lot of people were really talking about that. Nobody was really talking about Kentucky. They're a good team.
Well, that's what was hilarious because they went on like this ridiculous run in conference, not losing any games.
Yeah.
And still people wouldn't say much about them. You know, we didn't talk about them this year. We didn't play them. I'm sure we mentioned them. Yeah. But everybody was thinking, look, out of the East, it's just going to be Tennessee anyways. And out of the West, it's either going to be A&M or Arkansas.
Yeah.
And before the season, it sure wasn't going to be A&M. It was just going to be Arkansas, right?
It probably wasn't even going to be Kentucky, if we're being honest. Like, generally, people don't look at either A&M or Kentucky as traditionally strong SEC baseball teams. Tennessee either. I mean, Tennessee's had some success in the past, and Tony Vitello has absolutely built that program there. There's no question. But that's exactly what you're seeing with Schloss here at A&M. And that's what you're going to be seeing with Kentucky, too. You have like this next round of teams that are kind of filling in the gap that Mississippi and Ole Miss and Arkansas are trying to open up a little bit.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you're just talking about recent success, absolutely. But A&M has been to Omaha plenty of times.
Absolutely.
Kentucky literally has never been.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think that's where they got overlooked a lot is because when you look in the East, first of all, you're only looking at Tennessee as of late. You really are. You know, South Carolina's fallen off.
Yeah.
You know, Florida had a lot of struggles this year. So everybody was focused on Tennessee. And I think if we'd actually watched Kentucky play, it would have been a different tune. But I think all anybody did outside of Big Blue Nation with Kentucky was watch scoreboards.
Yeah.
And I think if you'd have been able to watch how they manufactured those wins, I think a lot of people would have been talking a lot more about Kentucky.
I don't disagree with you, but
I don't report on college baseball for a living. And so that, you know, I'm not pouring through hours of tape, you know, throughout the SEC, especially knowing that they weren't going to be on our schedule, at least, you know, until this point.
Yeah.
And so, but that Kentucky coach has, I think he's got something cooking there though. I really do. And I don't think he's going anywhere. And I want to get into a certain baseball coaching search here shortly.
Okay.
But today you got Florida State, UNC. This is a winner go home game. And, you know, on our side of the bracket, it's Florida, Kentucky, same situation. Now, whether that game gets played, whether either of them get played or completed, there's no telling because you know, we know from our delay that 11 p.m. is the latest you can start. So if one game gets delayed and then another delay comes through, another system comes through, it's just not going to happen. And now I don't know what the contingency plan is for that, because you have the championship series already set up Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So I don't think you're going to try and bump that into a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday.
Yeah.
So I think what ends up happening is, I mean, whoever wins Florida, Kentucky might just get screwed. Like if they get delayed into tomorrow, it might turn into a true regional where they got a doubleheader. That's tough.
Which, you know, not ideal, but unfortunately.
Just almost completely unfair.
Right. Yeah, it is unfair. That's very tough for a team coming through the loser's bracket to go through that situation. I'll just say I'm really glad we are not in that situation.
100%. Well, we're on the benefit side of it, quite frankly. If it does get delayed, and even if it gets delayed and they're like us, you know, and they had to play all the way till, you know, 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even if they get the game in, they're going to be on short rest that same day. They'll be laying their head on the pillow the same day they got to get up and play.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a huge advantage. So whoever it is, on the other side of the bracket, Florida State, UNC, I got to take UNC here.
Yeah, I mean, Florida State, I mean, they can rack up some runs pretty quickly and they can punish you for making mistakes. But a team like North Carolina does not make a ton of mistakes, and they've performed very well all season long. Yeah. You struggled in this Tennessee game, but I mean, I think North Carolina gets a rematch with them. I wouldn't be surprised to see it go to three.
I that UNC Tennessee game was almost must watch baseball. It was so good. Just punching back and forth. I thought Tennessee was going to be able to send it to extras. I really did. But I think I like UNC, as long as they didn't emotionally spend themselves, you know, trying to beat Tennessee. So I like UNC to come out of that bracket. On our side, I think it's kind of a coin flip, and I don't know who I'd rather see. Because if I'm Tennessee, I want to see Florida State.
Yeah.
But I think on our side, I don't know, man. I mean, do you want to play Cags again, or do you want the stress of having to deal with Kentucky small ball again? And, you know, Cags can beat you, but Cags can't beat your whole team generally.
No.
And if he's pitching, he's lost velocity over the last month or so. Like, put him on the mound.
If I had to pick one team to take on in the next round, I would say Florida, strictly because team ERA is significantly worse than Kentucky's. I mean, the fact is, if they're running out of pitching, that's advantage for our batters, and we could potentially get it going. Yes, Cags can score. Yes, they've got other scorers on the team, but we have plenty of them. And I would like us over winning one game out of the next two. If you had to give me a staff to face, I'll take on Florida.
Yeah, for me, I just I know that staff ERA is important, but at the same time, that's based off of weekend series where they weren't having to stress their pitching.
Sure.
Neither of these teams is going to be good in the pitching department by the time we get to tomorrow.
No.
So it's that. I think it almost goes back to offense.
Sure.
Like, which offense would you rather face? And I'm going to be honest, I don't know.
No.
I don't know if I want, because I thought Prager did great, but Kentucky just stresses out pitchers. If we're going to have to get into some of our, what, you know, less experienced portion of the bullpen, you know, that's where Kentucky wreaks havoc.
No.
So, I mean, would you rather deal with Florida? I don't know. I think either team we can win one out of two.
Yeah. And I think that's the most important thing. You just got to win a game. And yeah,
I want to see the drop off in like projected pitcher for each one, like for our game.
Yeah.
Like projected, you know, starter slash first guy out of the pen kind of thing. That would be my curiosity, because that's probably what would make my decision. Sure. Because we've seen both offenses and we can deal with both of them.
Yeah. And that's been proven. So, I mean, I like what we're seeing here. I mean, everything's setting up nicely. You just got to go in there and win a game and then take on one of the three out of Tennessee, North Carolina, Florida State, depending on how that shakes out. So just go out there and take care of business. Now, this is a business trip, and we have been proving it on this.
Well, and they've been acting like it. You know, absolutely. Here's my question I'll pose to you.
Sure.
Where are you going pitching-wise tomorrow?
You know, I'll be honest. I was something that did come up for me. I almost felt like maybe kind of a pseudo bullpen day, maybe some kind of combination where we'll see Lampkin maybe Cortez, maybe Auchinbeck again.
See, I knowing that, you, see, I, and I think that's, and this is why it's difficult for me to kind of do it. And this is why I don't get paid to make these decisions, because right. you have to think about possibly playing that third game.
Yeah.
But you have no desire to play that third game, right? Exactly. Or, well, fourth. It'd be fourth for us, excuse me.
Right.
To get the third win there.
Yeah.
So do you, like, run Rudis out, give him two or three innings, and then maybe just by committee tomorrow, you go Badmeev, you go Peavy, you throw Eldridge. I mean, you just kind of throw the lot at him, knowing that you're saving Lampkin and Cortez and Aschenbeck.
Maybe.
For a possible gotta-have-yous.
Maybe.
But if you get into a situation where you can win tomorrow or you're ahead and you need to shut the door, you know, then you bring in the big boys and you shut the door on them. You know, what you really hope is your offense explodes and you don't really care who you run out on the mound, right?
That would be ideal. I think if we can, I think if we can see, there's one thing I could get out of this next game. I want to see the bats consistently hitting well for more than an inning. I want to see, I want to see like Gavin get in there. I want to see Schott in there. I want to see, Appel in there. I want to see Burton in there. And, even, the rest of the lineup, there's really not a bad bat in this lineup. I understand that you have a little bit of an experience now that we're missing some folks. But, I mean, I'll give another shout out to Caden Kent. He had another phenomenal game and did really well at third base. I mean, made a great play.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Inning, double play, and that was inning, wasn't it? Yeah,
it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like, if worst case scenario, we have to sit Jace. I'm really curious to see what Jack Bell does.
Sure, I mean he's batted throughout the season, so it's not like we're missing.
Right.
I mean, we're missing production, but we're not missing a bat.
Right. Yeah. Chestnut's another one.
Yeah.
Sorrell,
Ollie Camarillo.
Ollie played great. Schott continues to amaze me. That dude's doing it on one leg. He is just straight up gutting it out. It's such an impressive performance. I can't say enough good things about Hayden Schott and the way he's playing. And I know he's in pain. You can see it when he's running. I mean, you can just straight up see it that he's running on about a leg and a half.
And that dude is like team chief morale officer, and he is doing such a phenomenal job. I mean, if you don't keep up with him on Twitter, it is one of the more funny things you can keep up with is Hayden Schott's shenanigans post game. But he does such a great job of hyping up his guys and supporting the team. And I think that's the big thing, very much a family situation in this team. And I love seeing it every day. These guys are fighting for each other and I love it.
Well, you see Braden, in the dugout too. He's got his leg all wrapped up post surgery. He's still just always smiling, always in a good mood. And look, baseball, nothing in life is all sunshine and roses. And certainly competition at the highest level, it's easy to get angry. So you hope like when guys like Gavin go out and have the day that he had. Now, out in the field, he was good.
Yeah.
He's really if well
above phenomenal play.
Yeah. But he's just struggling at the plate. You hope that the team morale is the kind of stuff that can keep him from getting too dark, too down on himself. And we haven't seen that really throughout the season from him, even though he's a freshman. He's just wildly mature. Not only is his actual baseball approach at the plate and his defense mature beyond his years as a true freshman,
yeah.
but his approach and his ability to kind of stay in the moment and not let stuff kind of hang around has been good. But I think when you have guys like Schott and Braden, and probably Appel, he's maybe a little bit more of a silent leader, but just those senior guys, Teddy Burton, they've played it longer, so they've seen more adversity. It's just a fact of life. Being able to be in his ear and help him, stay up about it and stay determined. And I really want to see some good at bats out of Gavin next game.
Same.
I don't care who we play. And I don't feel like his at bats have been absolutely awful. Just feels like he's pulling out a little bit. But another one talking about the attitude, Schloss is, he's a very no nonsense business kind of guy. But also, he allows some of the nonsense, right?
Sure. Just a little bit.
He's not just like a super stickler, like disciplinary guy that, nobody wants to get out of line with, but I'm sure that they don't want to get out of line with him, but he also understands that it is a game and these kids should be enjoying themselves. And so I think he's like this perfect mix, but obviously, when he's perched on the steps of the dugout with his peanut butter or his banana, You know, he's all business. But, you know, I thought Max Wiener, that if you saw it, there was a little clip of the post game and they asked him what, you know, because he came out of the dugout smiling. And more often than not, when he comes out of that dugout, no matter the situation, he generally has a smile on his face, or he smiles once he gets to talking to the pitchers. Mm-hmm. And I think that just speaks to the dynamics of this coaching staff of understanding that, you know, it is a game and it's okay to have fun. It really is. And you can have fun and still do what you're supposed to do, and, you know, and still, you know, go through the steps to make you successful. And so I thought that was hilarious, especially when he was like, I went out there and I was cussing. He's like, nah, it's just talking about it, man. If you can have fun, you can have fun. That doesn't detract from you being a competitor or you performing at the highest level, which is what we obviously saw at a Prager yesterday. And going back to game one, I do want to say, I thought Lampkin was great.
Incredible.
I thought Lampkin pitched so well. I'm not questioning Schloss pulling him out, because understanding that depending on how the second game goes, you know, you're down Sadeo. So you're down really, you're down to kind of, we'll call it two starters.
Mm-hmm. Really, truly, you know? Two true starters at this point.
Yeah, because Rudis is—he's an opener. He's not a starter. You know, Rudis is going to go out there and give you 6-7 innings.
Yeah.
His arm would probably fall off. That's just not his role. That's just not what he does. Now, if you asked it of him, I bet you he would do everything in his power to do so. Just because I feel like that's how this team is.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're down to two starters, so you got to save him. But you know, you have Cortez. And I've seen it on the board still. They're like, why don't you just start Cortez? And I'm like, why don't you read everything for the past year and a half?
Right.
Like, there's a mentality to being a starter. There's a mentality to being a reliever. Very few pitchers in their career, when they start, you know, getting to this high level of play and further, very few, like the elite, can switch up.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is such a different mentality. You know, the elite can do it. It's, and not that Cortez is an elite, but if he's comfortable coming out of the pen, even if, like, you just send somebody out there for one inning and then you're like, all right, you're the relief pitcher, and for some reason that flips the switch, then don't screw with it.
Well, I can remember vividly earlier this season when he was starting on Tuesdays and struggled a bit, but he found himself a role, being able to be that good middle reliever, and he has been outstanding in that role. I mean, he's throwing just the nastiest pitches, and he's getting whiffs, and he's getting strikeouts, and it's not always the prettiest thing, but my goodness, does he not take care of the situation and get out.
I wouldn't even call him a middle reliever. He's like a long reliever. He could close out a game for you because he's been a starter before. He has the arm endurance for it.
Right.
So he's so unique in the sense that you could run him out there for 90 pitches, and on the 90th pitch, he's going to be throwing it 100 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
His sinker is devastating. It's the best sinker in Omaha right now.
It's pretty nasty, no questions.
Or slider, it's a slider. It's a wipeout slider. Pitch.
It is.
Yeah, not a sinker. Sorry, I was thinking about Hertz.
You're good.
They were talking about Paul Skeens earlier today, and apparently he got bored and came up with a new pitch called the splinker.
Yeah,
it's a split finger sinker.
Interesting.
Whatever.
I saw a highlight of him last night in their game from the Pirates. He looks great. Just a quick aside. Good to see these college pitchers doing well, man.
He's so good.
He's very good.
I'm so glad he's not in college anymore.
Not right now, man. Like I said, that would have made for some problems, I think, at this tournament. But you know what?
He's just literally unhittable. I mean, pros can't hit him.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Yeah, but I did want to touch on Max Wiener, just what he's done, and I think Bronny put it out there, and Nolan Kane chimed in as well. Like, if this guy doesn't get assistant coach of the year, like, quit giving the award.
He has absolutely turned around this pitching staff, and I am all for us throwing whatever money we need to throw at him to keep him around for as long as he wants to be here.
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting one because he's young, you know, but he's only got 1 year experience in the college ranks. Not that necessarily matters because of, one, his experience in the pros, and then two, obviously what he's done in such a short amount of time. Yeah. Now, you know, I don't know the guy. Does he like it here? I don't know.
He likes his team.
Yeah, he likes his team, and it's easy to like the situation you're in when you're winning as well, right?
Oh, of course.
You know, in that core of Kane, Wiener, Schloss, there's a whole lot of baseball wins in front of them.
There are.
And so I don't think there's any way he goes anywhere after this year. You know, basically, if we win, then why would you leave? because nobody, I don't think anybody's going to give you any big program is going to give you a head coaching job based off 1 year, right? Like it has to be multiple data points. And even though you had success with the, you know, with the Mariners, I think they want to see it, you know, probably a little bit bigger data sample, you know, sample size for what you can do with college kids, just because they're wired differently, you know, obviously, right. But yeah, we do need to reach into our pockets for that guy. That's, I would love for him to stay around for a good long while.
I completely agree. Now, you had mentioned a coaching search that you wanted to touch on.
Yeah, so I don't think it's ever as crazy in baseball as it is in football. You know, in football, you have like, is it Black Monday? You know, where like you're just waiting for all the coaches to get fired on the same day within a 4 hour span.
Pretty much.
And obviously, you know, with the postseason being, you know, kind of stretched out, coaches leaving, coaches getting fired, you know, coaches moving, you know, from smaller programs to bigger programs. And so, you know, it obviously drags out. And then the coaches that are in Omaha, even if they're going to, even if something is going to change after the season, generally you're not going to hear anything out of it. That's incredibly unprofessional, quite frankly, for them to be talking about it while they're in Omaha. That's insane talk. But I wanted to go through the eight teams as far as the coaches are concerned, because there's a big opening up the road right now.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at their history of hiring coaches isn't going out and getting the big names. It's not. They think it is, but it's actually not. Like, wasn't Augie Garrido in high school?
Yeah, something like that.
He's like the top high school coach in the nation. They went and grabbed him, and he turned out to work out great, minus all the DUIs. Like, they've never gone out and poached a high-level coach. Steve Sarkisian is not a high-level coach. Tom Herman was not a high-level coach. Mm-hmm. You know, David Pierce was not a high-level coach. So their thought that they go out and poach these high-level coaches is completely ridiculous on their end. But if you look at the eight teams, you know, I kind of want to talk about each of them and I won't say what I think of their coaches. I think I've said enough about Tennessee. Mm-hmm. But we'll start on the left side of the bracket, right?
Sure.
And so you got Tennessee. Tony Vitello, that dude isn't going anywhere. Like, I think you're completely insane if you think he's going anywhere, at least anytime soon. Florida State, I don't know much about their coach. But Florida State is, I mean, they have the second most appearances in Omaha behind Texas. So that's a lateral move.
Yeah.
UVA, from what I've heard, he loves it there and he's never leaving. UNC, same thing. They were remarking on that, you know, he's just a good old country boy. He's right where he needs to be. His dad was up in the stands watching him play. Let's see. Yeah, and then we get over to our side, right? So you have Kentucky. He's building. So we talked about that earlier. I think he's building something in Kentucky. I don't see him going anywhere.
No.
I think he's really building something. NC State, that guy's 1 or 2 years from retirement. He's not taking another job. He was pretty clear about that. I was watching their super regional and he was talking about being, you know, whenever it's time to hang it up, you know, right off into the sunset, he said, it may not be this year, but it's probably not too far off. Like he just straight up said it on an interview. So like, it's already in the back of his head. He's been doing it for a long time.
Yep.
Florida. I mean, I can't see him going anywhere.
Not personally. No.
Again, it's a lateral move at best. You know, it's not a step up that everybody in Austin seems to think it is. I mean, Florida is an outstanding baseball program.
Sure.
And then obviously us, I can't fathom Schloss going anywhere. We're about to give him $80 million worth of renovations.
Everything you've built here at this point, you know, like you have everything set, and this school has made it very clear how much they want you here and the amount of money they're pouring into this program, not just for renovations, but also with this new facility that they're going to have for the players and everything else. I mean, at the end of the day, it's just completely unfeasible to think that. And I don't understand the people that are constantly like in their mindset, like, oh yeah, you know, he would come to Texas on a drop of a hat to leave A&M. He hates it there.
All CDC has to do is make a call. I think it's absolute bonkers dumb. But the other catch is he's been very clear. Like, he wanted to go to a place like A&M that has, you know, a history but no titles, and build it up to be a perennial powerhouse. Mm-hmm. Doing that at A&M or doing that at Texas is no different.
Well, I mean, if you look at, I mean, where he came from, you're talking TCU. You know, you come from a program that before you arrived really had no history whatsoever. And you take them to Omaha 5 times, you know, in a very short stretch of time. And yeah, you never make the championship series, but you are very competitive every time you've made that tournament, and you've always been a thorn in the side to a lot of teams, not to mention us, you know, like his long history with us, Texas, Baylor. I mean, he just was a thorn for all of us. And now, you know, with his move into the Big 12, that just expanded, you know, their outreach. And that's when they really started popping off. Now, since then, you know, you come to A&M, which is a program that is pretty much, I mean, like, all the pieces are here. The pieces have been here. You know, the old adage of A&M is just one of those sleeping giants of an athletic department. And yet, I'm not sure it's sleeping so much, because if you look at what's just happened with the Director's Cup, which obviously doesn't matter all that much, but we finished 7th in the Director's Cup standings this year, minus a ton of the sports that these other people compete in. Like, we're not doing rowing teams, and we're not doing all this. Yeah, we don't have beach volleyball. What are we doing? We're out here just going with the standard stuff, and we're still very competitive. Like, A&M is where is a place to be right now.
No, 100%. And I think the other, you know, the other falsity that comes out is, you know, Schloss and CDC were homies at TCU, so there's, you know, no reason for him not to follow him. First of all, CDC didn't hire Schloss at TCU.
No.
All right? Like, he wasn't part of that. So, you know, if there was ever going to be, I'm going to go because my athletic director's there, well, Eric Hyman hired him at TCU. And last I remember, we had Eric Hyman here, so if he was going to jump ship, you know, I feel like that would have been the time. When he left TCU to come to A&M, if he didn't go to Texas then, I don't think he's going to Texas ever.
No.
And I think you see David Pierce, what is it, 3 out of the last 4 years he's been to Omaha or some crap like that? And they're talking about firing him? How toxic can any more of their sports get relative to how they treat head coaches?
I mean, if we just go back to football, I mean, I can remember like the Charlie Strong days. I mean, poor Charlie. I mean, I feel bad for the man, because, you know, he gets hired, comes in, and does a fairly decent job with that program, but it was very clear that they weren't behind him. He wasn't the first choice. I think he was like 6th or 7th down the list of the coaches they wanted. And so they have seen so much turnover in football. Granted, yeah, it seems they have their guy in Sarkisian at this point, but fact is, there is that level of entitlement that has just permeated throughout that athletic department. Like, we have to be the best, and we will throw whatever money we have to throw to be the best. And if we got to go hire the best possible coach right now, we're going to do it. At least try, you know, just where they're at.
Oh, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole too much with them, because we're having too much success, and I certainly don't want to bring them in conversation.
Fair enough.
But so I'm excited. I think it is absolutely imperative that we win tomorrow. I don't care who we play, because, you know, the way it sets up, you know, Tennessee gets extra rest.
Yeah. Which is earned as the one seed, sure, but.
But if they can get pushed to, you know, a fourth game, whereas, you know, we can keep it at 3, then that flip-flops.
Absolutely. Which, you know, so there's a lot of X factors that we don't have a hold of.
Yeah, there's so much that goes into this. And that's why I think when you're able to step back and if you can really, if you were to make a list of everything you have to take into consideration when you take a team to Omaha, I think it just makes it that much more impressive. The decisions that Schlossnagel has made and the ones he's continuing to make. Sounds like if Jace can't go, it looks like it's going to be Bell, because it was Bell, right?
Yep. Next man up.
And he was real clear about, you know, the roster before we played a game. You know, we had to go real heavy on pitchers, so we don't have that many position players, which, you know, hopefully it doesn't come back to bite us in the butt.
Fingers crossed. But
yeah, but, you know, you still got a week of this stuff left, man.
you need to win 3 more games at this point.
Yep.
You just got to go out and win 3 games. Find a way. That's all.
Find a way. And I think that's almost got to be the motto for tomorrow. I don't care who you play. I don't care who has to pitch. I don't care who has to play where. DH, you know, if we've got a, you know, pinch run, whatever you got to do, do it tomorrow. Get that rest. You know, get that extra day of rest in there. And maybe if for some reason we don't have Jace, just because he needed that extra day, you know, then we've given him that extra time. And then we go into, you know, then we can go into the weekend. But still, obviously, you got to take care of things before you can talk about Saturday.
That's right.
But I feel really confident knowing, quite frankly, knowing that the weather might really hose the Florida-Kentucky game, I feel really good about it.
Yeah, no, I think we're set up in the best possible position that we've ever had in Omaha. So all we have to do is go out there and win. Be good, yeah, as your hat says.
All we got to do, right?
Well, all we got to do.
Yeah, it's so hilarious. You think back to the George Strait concert, too. Like, you know, Omaha gets delayed, obviously, because God loves the Aggies. He wants to make sure they can watch their baseball.
Worked out.
Yeah, this front moving through, screwing Florida, Kentucky, potentially. Like, it literally just plays directly in our hands. So it's funny how that kind of all worked out. That was a fun game, despite having to be up until, you know, 2 a.m.
Yeah, it was. And just a quick aside, since we hadn't had a chance to talk about it, my God, Jace LaViolette, your catch at the end of that game.
Yeah, and again,
legendary.
And again, Braden goes out. So it's just these things happen in baseball, and Schloss makes the changes. And not that he had any idea that that was going to happen, obviously, but just the moves he makes and then how things just, it's like when you get put in a game, right? The ball is going to find you. If you get put in the middle of a game, the ball is absolutely going to find you. Jace got moved to right field, ball found him, and the most important ball of the night.
Yes, it was.
That was, it's funny. If you heard the post-game interview, he's like, well, first off, I got turned around the wrong way. He's like, so then I had to get myself turned back around, had to get back, had to find the wall. But once I found the wall, I felt pretty good about it.
That's, yeah. And it worked out. It absolutely worked out. And I'm really, really happy that we're in the position we're in. Could not be more ecstatic for these boys and everybody up there celebrating in Omaha. Proud of y'all too.
Well, I'll tell you another thing. You know, it worked out. Also worked out well because my daughter had to work.
Yeah.
And so she got home in time to watch the last few innings. And so we got to celebrate Jace's catch and just kind of a special moment, you know, getting to spend that watching it with my kiddo. And awesome. And she's really turned into a full fledged Ag. You know, she's in summer school, but yesterday she was at we have one of those, you know, living room tables that raises up. Mm-hmm. And so she like parked it and got all set up and she was sitting there doing homework in between innings.
Nice.
Like she was, well, if we weren't batting, like if we were pitching, she wouldn't pay much attention to it. But like she was looking out, but she took herself out of her room. She got a desk. It's where she kind of operates, or she either does some work in her bed or she does at her desk. But like she got all set up, like set up shop out in the living room so she could watch baseball while doing homework. So proud Aggie dad moment.
That's awesome.
Of course I say that. And then like, if she screws up the homework, then I'm a moron for saying that, but
it's all right. It'll be fine. I'm sure it'll pan.
But yeah, just really great baseball the last 2 days. And I'm sure that
across the tournament, I mean, there hasn't been a bad game yet.
No. Yeah. There really hadn't been. I mean, I feel like if we go all the way back to the regional, you know, which feels like a million years ago, by the way,
it does. It really does.
You know, heading into that regional, you know, what were our thoughts? We weren't playing the greatest of baseball, right? We went 2-2 in the SEC tournament. Mm-hmm. You know, Prager wasn't pitching well. So I think there was maybe a little bit of angst heading into the regional, not necessarily losing it, but you know, it may not be as pretty as we'd like it.
There was certainly thoughts going through my head, like, for the love of God, don't lose this Texas game. Please don't lose this Texas game. And we found a way to win. Like I said, it wasn't the prettiest win, but you win.
And now all of a sudden you're sitting in Omaha and you haven't lost in the postseason.
Like, and depending on the results of this first game between North Carolina and Florida State, potentially A&M doesn't lose to a non-conference opponent ever this season.
Well, I mean, that'll come down to, you know, what Tennessee does.
And that will come down to what Tennessee does. But I mean, that's just a crazy thought that's even a possibility. Like, you're going to go the entire season.
Let's see. So it was, I'm trying to remember the dang bracket. From the get go,
yeah. I have
on our side. Yeah, you know what I had it written down.
Yeah, I've got it right here. You've got so on our side, you got Kentucky, NC State, A&M, Florida. Other side, you had North Carolina, Virginia, and Tennessee, Florida State. So you have North Carolina and Florida State playing first, and then you'll have them playing Tennessee after that.
Right. So that's right. So Florida beat Clemson, NC State beat UGA, and UK beat. Yeah. So, and who did Tennessee beat to get to us or Evansville. To get to Florida State?
Evansville.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. So I think right now we're the only team in the tournament that's beat an SEC team.
Oh, that's an even crazier thought to think about it.
We're the only team in Omaha that's beat an SEC team yet.
Booyah!
Look at us. We beat Kentucky. They haven't. I mean, obviously, that'll end today because somebody has to win in the Florida Kentucky game.
But fun stats for the day.
Yeah. Hey, those are one of those like the stats that I always just, you know, remember like, what was it 15 years ago, maybe when statistics all of a sudden just exploded on the scene.
Right.
And it's like in the month of June when it's a 3/4 moon and it's a 2 o'clock pitching game, this guy has the best ERA on the West Coast, just north of the, like, you're like, what are you talking about, guy?
I mean, the analytics game is truly insane, but you know what? It's a fun stat, and fun stats are always fun. Like the fact that we've won a game in Omaha in the last, you know, day, whereas certain people haven't won in over 1,000 days, but I'm not going to talk about them.
Yeah. So in baseball is like the master of all the goofiness, right?
It is. And that's why we love it.
Yeah. The analytics in baseball are just stupid.
They are. They are, but we love them anyway, because, well, I mean, and it's the same analytics. Obviously people were asking on the A&M uniform tracker. They said, hey, I want batting average in this uniform. I want ERA in this uniform. And I'm like, I don't have the time to do that.
I've just been like, it's nice to want things.
It's nice to want things. I will make the graphics. I will post them out and say, boom, here's the record. Here's how the uniforms stand. I'm not going to sit there and nitpick all the little details. Although if somebody wants to do that, that's listening to the podcast and send that information to me, I'll consider it for next year.
Any math or just, yeah, there you go.
Divvy off. So
quick predictions and then we'll 15 for team farmers fight call tonight.
Yeah. Go ahead.
On the sports stuff.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So I've got UNC getting past Florida State. I've got UNC taking Tennessee to an extra game. I've got Tennessee coming out of that side of the bracket.
I am right there with you. I'm feeling North Carolina in that Florida State game. And I do think that they will beat Tennessee Wednesday. I think it'll be a tight game, but I think North Carolina wins it. And, yeah, it'll play out. If on the other side of the bracket, what you got?
It's such a coin toss. I'm going to go with Kentucky. Just because I think they're going to put too much stress on what's at this point a depleted Florida staff.
Right.
I think Kentucky can get past Florida. And so I'll take Kentucky to come back to us. I'll take us beating them first game and getting the extra rest. So obviously this is really optimistic and I'm sunshine pumping. But basically giving you best case scenario would be Tennessee doesn't get out of their bracket, but Tennessee, right. I think Tennessee takes care of business against North Carolina. I think UNC has it in them to push them one more game.
Sure.
But I don't think UNC has it in them to beat Tennessee. I just don't. And then I like us to get through Kentucky. I like Kentucky to beat Florida. And I like us to get past Kentucky again. I don't think Florida or Kentucky, I think we can beat either of them in one game just because that back-to-back plus what maybe some weather delays, they're just going to be out of pitching and like just full-blown out of pitching. And, you know, you take that team staff ERA, lop off the top two or three guys, you're like the top two starters and the best reliever, and then, you know, all hell breaks loose on ERAs at that point.
Yep. I'm right there with you. I'm feeling in reality, like I said, I would like to face Florida, but I think it's going to be Kentucky. But on the same token, I'm with you. I think we win that game. So A&M potentially sitting in a good spot when that takes place, if our predictions hold.
And if it all works out on Friday, maybe we'll hop on and do a quick preview and kind of predictions for what we think is going to happen over the weekend.
Friday, I'm going to be on my way to Tulsa.
We can do it over like 10 minutes over the phone, man.
Yeah, so we'll find a way. We'll do something.
You can do it in the van.
Yeah, we'll like I said, we'll find a way.
So just get up super early and get those guys drinking as many coffees and Gatorades as possible. So at some point you're gonna have to stop for a pee break, and we'll just knock it out while you're at a Buc-ee's.
Fair enough. We'll see what we can do on that, because we will. So in regards to that, this weekend we are heading up to Amarillo Thursday, and then Tulsa for back-to-back shows at Kane's Ballroom Friday and Saturday night, which will be sold out, which is going to be insane. Opening
Well,
for again.
maybe we could, if not Friday, maybe we can squeeze in like Saturday morning when you get up before you kind of get going, just before the series starts, see if we can't just do something. But
Honestly.
if not, don't hold our feet to the fire. It is what
Yeah,
it is.
we'll try to make it work. So kind of moving away from the sports side of things. Coming back to Aggieland this weekend. Holy cow! George Strait Saturday night was an absolute blast. I had a
Yeah.
great time.
And I heard all the problems with congestion, and obviously it doesn't sound like it sounded like they should have had the football exit strategy set up, and they didn't. I know
Right.
I heard people that were literally sitting still in a parking garage for an hour or more. So the back end logistics of it kind of suck, but the pictures coming out of that and literally the national exposure it got. Like you got Clay from Outkick coverage. He put it out there, and he's got such a big, draw too. I mean, it was everywhere on social media, absolutely everywhere. And obviously, the algorithm for me is a whole bunch of Aggies, but there were national people talking about that concert.
Oh, and I can speak to that because there's a lot of people in the music industry side on Instagram that I follow that are not A&M people whatsoever. And they had nothing but cool things to say about that particular concert. Everybody was posting about it. I mean, largest ticketed concert in US history at 109, oh, it was 111,000 or 110,009 is what it came out to, which is just insane. That is an
Bonkers.
incredible number.
Just a sea of people, just such great scenes coming out of it. So kudos to A&M for putting that together, doing back-to-back weeks between Mexico, Brazil, and then Mexico, Brazil, while you have baseball going on too.
Yeah.
And then obviously the George Strait concert. So showing it can be done. It's just, and it was unique. I was kind of reading some stuff on this stuff that I don't know because I don't, I'm not a worldwide musician touring guy.
Sure.
But you got to catch people that aren't on tour because generally there's rules about distances from venues, and because we're right in the middle, it rules us out. So gotta find somebody when they're off tour. But
Yeah, we unfortunately fall into an issue what they call the 90-mile, 90-day rule, which is where like within 90 miles, you can't have something within 90 days. So
right.
you couldn't. A lot of times, that's where we conflict because we will be bouncing back and forth between Austin and Houston, and both of those places are about 90 miles, and they have a tough sell to try to get concerts, especially big concerts over here. So, it's good to see. And frankly, it just further encourages the idea of, hey, you can do it. You absolutely should do it. And it's a good money
Proved it
maker.
could be done. Proved it
Yeah.
could be done. I thought that was the most important part. Like it proved that it could be done. And so, now that option exists.
It does. And
Like,
that makes me happy.
yeah. So,
Especially with the lack of music venues kind of creeping its head around here. So I'm looking forward to that a little bit more. And then just wrapping up, the Dixie Chicken 50th 50th birthday party really was a good time. I had a blast. For anybody that was out there at the chicken.
It's just such a big venue and such a big party. It was great to see all those people out there celebrating what's really become truly a Texas A&M institution. Like, honestly, I mean, it's outside of Kyle Field, Olsen, and All Britain Tower kind of thing, is the Dixie Chicken. So congratulations to them, sticking it out. It's hard to be a restaurant or a bar and make it that long, quite frankly.
It is. And the music was great. Enjoyed Max and Heather Stalling put on a great show. Dub Miller, Hayden Baker, Keller Cox.
Yeah, I mean, you've even seen, bars on Northgate not make it.
Yeah.
So it's certainly become an institution. So congratulations to the Bird on 50. That's a really awesome accomplishment, and kind of here's to another 50 kind of thing.
Exactly. One very last thing. I do want to say a quick prayer and thoughts for our friends out in Ruidoso, New Mexico. If you have not been
Oof,
keeping up with that
so
wildfire
bad.
out there, scary. New one fired off this late last night, and it's currently on track for the Rudolph Sundown's racetracks, which, I mean, I having grown up out there and spent virtually every summer with some kind of family reunion thing in Ruidoso, that's a very special place for me. So yeah. It's sad to see them struggling with that. Hopefully they get it contained soon. And, you know, just prayers for our firefighters and everybody that's trying to evacuate and anybody stuck out there. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Didn't want to end on a somber note, but we did want to just make it a point just to keep people in your thoughts and prayers. There's real world struggles out there and people need their help.
Yeah, and good news coming out of the storm in the Gulf. Looks like it's not going to just sit on Houston. So
We'll get rain up here, but it's not going to be anything too crazy. I think we'll be all right.
Yeah, just another set of rain. I'm numb to it at this point. But again, try not to complain. So
try not to complain. Don't have to run the sprinklers.
enjoy the games today. You know, I hate watching them sometimes just because the losers are done and like the emotions. I know it's so tough.
Yeah.
But hopefully two good baseball games today and hopefully only one more game for us before the weekend. Yep. But absolutely enjoy watching the baseball because there's not much of it left this year. Yep. Did want to give a quick shout out. Softball put out the graphic and we mentioned it, but they've got three Gatorade players of the year from their respective states coming in the recruiting class. And one of them was a two-timer. So just Trisha Ford, just making hay while the sun shines.
Fun times in Aggieland, man. I'm Rob White. This is Roy May. We are the Red Ass Podcast. Gig 'em, beat the hell out of Omaha.
Good.